Live from the Sims Tower in the Robinson Auto Group studio, we are AM 1600 WKKX.
What? That went out, didn't it?
Oh, well. Oh, well.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Whispers on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog. Are we good, Biff?
Yeah.
All right, we are recording. I hope we're recording.
Yes,
or going live. We're doing one of them. If you're listening to the Penguins game right now, we apologize. The Penguins will be back soon.
Uh-huh.
If you're, that's what happens.
Oh, it is.
If you're listening next week, which would be today, ooh, there's a paradox. March 12th.
Yes.
Then I'm in South Carolina. I'm at Myrtle Beach. I'm having a good time.
And I'm here freezing.
And Lola's reading a book, wanting to know why you're still trying to call when she's not going to answer because she's in the middle of a chapter.
Yes.
The book she's probably going to be reading.
Yes.
Is called Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. Written by a man named Thomas Fusco.
Are you there, Tom?
And he's with us.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Tom. Are we there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're recording, so we're kind of like trying to work out the bugs and get everything working at the same time. So it is what it is.
Oh, well. See, anybody listening to the Penguins game thinks that it's live. They're playing live here in the studio.
I see.
That's all.
That's a big studio.
Uh-huh. It is.
So what's been going on? It's been a few months since we've had you on.
Yes. Well, I've been talking to a lot of different people on various radio shows. Most interesting news, though,
yes,
is that we recently had a interview where the co-host was a man named David Roundtree.
Hmm.
And most people in the paranormal field, at least, are familiar with David's work. He's taken a very, very scientific approach to various aspects of experimentation with the paranormal. And he's been concentrating more on various aspects of EVPs. And what we found that was very interesting when we put our heads together is that he has conducted some experiments and has gotten some very unusual results that were actually predicted by my theory, which is extremely unusual, particularly in the paranormal field.
Your theory is unusual?
Well, the idea that I actually have a theory of the paranormal that's a quote-unquote scientific theory, which means that it actually makes physical predictions that can be scientifically, experimentally tested. And
is that your theory of supergeometry?
Yes, sir.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. As you may have recalled from before, one of the aspects of this theory of the paranormal is that in these haunted houses and in the vicinity of this paranormal activity, part of my model involves the bending of space, what I call the superphysical bending of space. And we see this out in astrophysics when we look out into these vast expanses of the universe.
Yeah.
We see great fields of gravitational lensing where space is bent, but there's no adjacent physical matter to cause it. And some in the physics community has speculated that there might be such a thing called dark matter. But there's no evidence that that exists.
Now, is that what they were trying to make with that Large Hadron Collider?
Well, that's a different aspect of gravity. What they're trying to find with that, among other things, is the what they call the Higgs boson.
Okay.
And this is a particle that is supposed to have imparted mass to other particles so that they would indeed be able to create a gravitational field, and so help them try to explain how from the chaos of the early universe, suddenly this really highly improbable order began to arise from that chaos and collect itself into galaxies and stars and solar systems and that type of thing. But the dark matter was something that they're also hoping that they can catch a glimpse of with that collider, as well as perhaps see evidence for a graviton. And so far, none of these things have been discovered.
Now, when you're talking about bending space and, you know, all that, are we talking on, like, a large scale, like, out in, like, outer space? Or are we talking about being able to bend space here on Earth?
Well, here's the thing. With this bending of space that we know is associated with gravitational fields, astrophysicists have been able to determine, and this is kind of a startling statistic, that close to 90% of the gravitational lensing that they observe in the universe has no adjacent physical mass to it. Basically, we have 90% more gravity than we have mass to generate. And so that was one of the foundations of my theory when thinking about all the very unusual and strange mysteries that we have surrounding gravity, that the bending of space could have something to do with paranormal phenomena. Because here again, just as in this lensing that I'm talking about with no adjacent mass as its cause, in paranormal phenomena, we have physical effects that are observable, that interact with their surroundings, but have no direct adjacent physical cause in that vicinity connected to it. And so for me, what I did was I surmised, okay, what would we have if we had gravitational lensing or the bending of space inside of a house? Where we actually have, rather than in the vacuum of space, we actually have surrounding material that would be immediately affected by that bending. And so it's that particular model that gives rise to a number of physical predictions that are testable.
Now, what would happen, let's say, in that situation where there's bending of space inside of a house? Are we talking about, like, distortion of the way we see things? Are we talking about, you know, furniture exploding? Are we talking about black holes?
Well, as far as we've observed, I don't think it's anything that extreme.
Okay.
But it wouldn't take much bending to create an effect. Just to give you an example, imagine inside of a house we were to have a bubble of space-time begin to expand, almost like a hollow bubble. One of the things that this would do is it would compress and twist the space immediately surrounding it. We know that this phenomena exists because we see it, we measure it on large scales, even in our very own solar system. The fields that surround the objects like the sun and the planets, they twist and bend the space around them. One of the things that this would do if it was in the presence of material, let's say like air molecules, is that it would also make a mechanical compression on those molecules themselves. And in doing so, the electrons inside of the atoms in those gas molecules would begin to jump up into their higher valences or orbits. And this very common phenomena. But when this happens, one of the things that we would measure is the appearance of an electromagnetic field literally out of thin air. So this is one of the phenomena that we would observe if this was occurring. One of the other things that would happen, as the electrons expended their excitement and they drop back down to their lower orbits, they can give off a couple of different things. One thing that they can do is emit photons. This is still a little bit mysterious in physics, but an electron can release that extra energy as a photon. And this is an effect that we see every day in our modern technology world. You take an electromagnetic field, you pass it through a particular material. It excites the electrons. When they fall back down into their lower orbits, they give off photons. That's basically how a light-emitting diode works, an LED.
Yeah.
So if people are following what I'm saying visually in their minds, they might observe that what I just described was a luminous orb. This is exactly what it would be. It would be spherical. It would be surrounded by an electromagnetic field. And it could also, under certain circumstances, give off luminous phenomena. Another thing that we would see is when these electrons fall back down into their lower orbits under certain circumstances, mm-hmm. they can give off heat.
Okay.
They can give off thermal energy. And so we have seen, investigators have gone in to these haunted sites with thermal imaging cameras and have captured some very interesting images, some of them so detailed that they're actually, you could actually see an apparition. But when you study these images very carefully, what you will notice is that unlike an image of a human being or a living creature thermally, where you see wide variations in the thermal signature from the various places on the flesh and the clothes, when you look at these paranormal images, you'll notice that the thermal signature is more or less uniform over the entire figure.
Okay, yeah.
Which means that unlike with a living creature, that the mechanism that's creating that thermal signature is uniform across the entire surface. And this would also be consistent with this model that I'm describing.
You are too smart for my brain right now. Now, in your theory... And I believe you call this the model of supernatural mechanics?
Correct? Yes.
Right? See? I'm with you, Tom. Mm-hmm. Now, you're talking about, on a deeper level, you think the paranormal, you know, is, how do I even want to say it? Like, space bending in front of you, you know, will create these events. You know, they move and bend and create these different things. How do you explain, like, EVP and things like that?
Well, here's what's interesting about this. The bending of space is one of the aspects of my theory.
Okay, so that's just you know, part of it then.
Yeah, that's just part of the recipe, so to speak. Another part of it has to do with information that exists outside of space-time. And this has been called quite a few different things throughout history. This idea has been around for a long time, that there is an order or a structure or a matrix which exists above and outside of space-time, the order of which determines our physical space-time, both its characteristics and its forms and its you know, and the way it behaves. But what has always been missing is how this body of information could actually, quote-unquote, materialize in physical reality. And part of my model is that this information, if it falls into one of these pockets of space-time that are being created, it essentially drops into our realm of dimensional space, and at that point it materializes inside of these pockets of space-time. And so, for example, if you're talking about an EVP, for example,
okay,
the pocket of space-time that I'm talking about that opens up actually creates the environment or the crucible in which this material or this information can materialize. So if you could picture, for an example, an intelligent collection of information, like our own intelligence in living beings, if you could imagine that same kind of a collection of intelligence.
Like the energy, you mean?
Well, like it, but we're not actually talking about energy See, according to my model, these entities, these spirits, these intelligences, whatever they are not themselves energy. We only see energetic manifestations when they materialize, but they're not stored in a form of energy. But if that information materialized inside of one of these bubbles of space-time, and that information happened to be an intelligent speech, so to speak, let's say an intelligent collection, a coherent collection of information was actually trying to speak a sentence, then what would happen is that that information would actually vibrate the very fabric of space-time at the surrounding surface of that bubble, and it would act like a speaker. So the very fabric of space itself is acting like a loudspeaker, so to speak. And that would have two effects. It would have an acoustic effect because it would vibrate the surrounding air molecules in the same way as a set of vocal cords.
Now, let me stop you real quick.
Sure.
Now, we're talking in a room, space bends, bubble creates. With that bubble, energy can be... or not energy, like the sound waves of all the like life forces or whatever can be broadcast through this space bubble to some degree. Am I following you?
To an extent.
To an extent. Okay, this bubble, like, is this a viewable bubble? Is this, you know, something that we might be able to see, that we can feel, that we can touch? Or is this like a not-to-our-eyes kind of phenomena?
The bubble itself is not visible.
Okay.
In other words, it's just like when we when they proved Einstein's special theory of relativity by viewing the way light was from distant stars was bent around the sun during a solar eclipse.
Uh-huh.
The eclipse made those stars visible during the day. You couldn't actually see the substance of space itself being bent. All you could see was the bending of the energy beam that was passing through that, you know, that curvature of space. So in a haunted house, we would have a very similar effect or an observation in that we wouldn't actually see the space bend itself, but we would see the effects that that bending space would have on its surroundings.
Mm.
And, of course, if that bubble, if that surface of space-time was vibrating according to a materializing collection of information that constituted a human voice, then that fabric of space-time, that edge of that space would actually vibrate very much like a speaker. And it would agitate the air molecules around it just like a set of vocal cords. And you would hear literally a disembodied voice coming out of thin air.
Now, with your view, with your particular view on paranormal phenomena, what are your views on, I don't want to say ghosts, I mean like that ghosts were living people, that demons exist, you know, that area of the phenomena where most people say, okay, you know, EVP might be a type of seance where you're trying to call onto spirits from another realm, you know, this, you know, your chair flying across the room would be, you know, a demon trying to get you. What are your views there that go along with your space bending?
Well, this is a very difficult subject. What I say is that I see the investigations into the paranormal basically from two different directions. One of them is the, like in a police force, one of them's like the criminology unit.
Uh-huh.
And what we're talking about right now is the criminology, who done it, and if there is a perpetrator. And on my end, most of my work has been done with the forensics, which has been the area that has been very sorely lacking in this field. But if I was to drift over to the criminology, for example, and talk about that, I see it something like, let's say if you were going to go into a library and use a library computer, Now, you have all this information on that library hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And that user has access to all that information that's on that hard drive. But the user doesn't own that hard drive. And we don't necessarily know the identity of the user. So, for example, if somebody gets a message that sounds like it's coming from, you know, poor deceased Aunt Mary.
Uh-huh.
Well, that collection of information about everything that was in Aunt Mary's consciousness
could be anywhere.
Well,
from anything.
It lies in this area outside of space-time. It does exist, but we have no idea who's using it.
Okay. Okay. With that, are you against the idea that this type of paranormal encounter could be like bleed through from another dimension?
Yes. I'm a firm non-believer in all the variations today of what they call the multiverse.
Okay.
And there are multiple reasons why. When you really start peeling it back and look at the details, why that theory really doesn't work. And in fact, I'm working on a book that I'm hoping to publish sometime in the summer called The Multiverse Conspiracy. And it actually discusses all these different aspects and how the fundamental roots of the theory is from an atheistic scientific viewpoint to try to destroy anything that we would call spiritual.
Huh. Now, I guess with this view, how do you feel, and where do, let's say, UFOs, aliens, Bigfoot, any other type of phenomena that we would call paranormal, how does that fit into your field?
Well, one of the things that I did when I started my research was to try to get a very clear definition that was scientifically consistent for what I viewed the paranormal as being.
Uh-huh.
And that did involve the idea of having a physical effect that was observable, that interacted with its environment, but had no local direct physical cause.
Okay, so a paranormal event is something that has a physical, you know, thing with the environment around it.
Right, but has no local direct physical cause.
Okay.
Yeah, like if you picked up a baseball and threw it across the room, everybody can clearly see that all the matter and energy that's stored and directed in your body is what caused that baseball to lift up in the air and throw it.
Yeah.
With a paranormal phenomena, the ball gets thrown across the room, but there's no local energy or matter source creating it. So that's what physics calls non-local causality. So in that definition, we could certainly include UFO behavior as falling under that category, at least certain aspects of it. But for me, something like Bigfoot, for example, I believe that's actually falls under cryptozoology. I believe that is a living creature, and someday somebody's going to drag in a body. What we see when we see a Bigfoot has a physical body that's reflecting the photons that enter into our eyes. But when you see something like an apparition or a shadow figure, there is no physical body that's deflecting the photons.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I get that. I'm actually up with this, Lola.
I'm just sitting here marveling that you two are carrying on this conversation, and I am, like, completely not lost, but I'm just lost. I guess that's, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I'm glad you two know what you're talking about. We'll just put it that way.
Now, see, it's a stretch for me because he's a whole lot smarter than I am.
Yeah, I'm feeling like, you know, this has got to be something like Paranormal for Dummies, and I just dropped the book. So,
well, the challenge with this is that it is a completely different and new paradigm. It's a very different way of looking not only at the paranormal, but at reality as a whole. Traditionally, we've always looked at things in a materialistic way. And so going back to gravity, we would know that there were gravitational effects associated with physical bodies like the planets, or even small bodies floating in space by themselves will eventually attract each other. And so from a materialistic viewpoint, we've always looked at this physical mass being the source that actually generates gravity, and that's what our whole mental picture is shaped around. It's that paradigm. But there's so many mysteries that we haven't been able to solve with gravity that I've come up with the idea that the reason why is that it is not matter that generates gravity. It is the curvature of space which produces a gravitational effect within which matter materializes. And so when you look at the universe in reverse like that and use that different paradigm, suddenly these things about the paranormal become more tangible and more understanding. It's just a matter of, well, it's like taking the ancients of several thousand years ago when they looked up at the light night sky. They saw a glass firmament with holes punched through it. That light was shining through. If you gave them the paradigm we have today and stuck it in their mind, their eyes would see the same physical things, but the rush of understanding of what they were actually looking at would probably make them pass out.
It's kind of like you take a guy from like the 40s and just automatically like zap him into today's universe and their brain explodes on, you know.
It would be tough. Could you imagine taking a caveman and just if you could suddenly, like instantaneously, teleport him into the passenger seat of an automobile going 80 miles an hour? He would probably die of a heart attack. He'd probably pass away. But we take it for granted. So the problems with what I'm talking about here and understanding it isn't so much that the ideas are all that complex. I mean, if we think of space as a fabric and we think of it vibrating and giving off a voice like the paper of a speaker, that's pretty easy to understand. What's hard to wrap our heads around is kind of twisting the picture of reality to a point to where we're looking at it from a different paradigm.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, it took me a little while. Like I said, I worked on close to 30 years on this. It took me a while to wrap my head around all this, too. But anyway.
Now, were you sitting at home and the power went out and you really didn't have anything else to do and you're like, I'm just going to reinvent paranormal activity?
Actually, what it was more of a process of just be educating myself more and more of all the strange and unusual phenomena that's observed in our universe, paranormal or even in quantum physics or physical anomalies that we don't have answers for, and really just putting them into a pot in my head, so to speak, and having them cook and brew together for a long time until finally, bingo, a picture popped up and said, you know, if the universe was put together in such and such a way, then suddenly all these things make sense. And that's really what the process was like.
Now, I kind of see the universe as a giant, like, clockwork. You know, all these gears working in different time, different, you know, things going on that affects everything. I mean, the moon going around affects our tide, like.
Yes, and that's exactly how Isaac Newton pictured it. He basically, the idea of clockwork universe is from Isaac Newton. And Einstein, of course, demonstrated that.
I do want to verify really quick that Mr. Thomas Fusco did identify me as the modern day Isaac Newton.
There you go.
Now, Tom, you want to talk about this show moving into paranormal? That was just it.
I'll be looking for that check in the mail.
Don't look too hard or long.
Yeah.
But to get back to what I was talking about with the experiments with David Rowntree, there are a number of predictions that this model would make if we're seeing this curving of space inside of a haunted house, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
One of the things it would create would be a barometric variation, that the pressure on the outside of this bubble would be higher than the pressure on the inside. In fact, if this bubble opened up very quickly to where the surrounding material couldn't flow into it gracefully and fill it, we would have a temporary vacuum there, not only of material, but of thermal energy. This is one of the things that creates these cold spots.
Now, here's something I want to ask, because as you were saying this, I was getting this, you know, brain picture, I guess, of one of these, you know, bubbles kind of opening up in a room. And I'm thinking, what's stopping this thing from opening up inside of a person?
Oh, what? I think at times it can happen like that.
And what happens in that situation? Are we talking like teleportation, that kind of thing?
Well, now, you know, we're talking about that would be something different. According to my model, teleportation would actually be the collapsing of the space bubble that exists around all material. All things in the universe, including people, have a bubble of space-time that is bent around them.
Okay.
And if you collapse that bubble, according to my model, the physical body that was occupying it would just completely disappear from space-time. It would dematerialize, literally. And yet the information, all the information that would be necessary to rematerialize that body still exists outside of space-time. And so it would be just a matter at that point, and I believe UFO technology takes advantage of these principles. It would be a matter of artificially creating another bubble of space-time at a different location and then broadcasting that information within that bubble of space-time, and that person would rematerialize at that different location. That, according to my model, is a description of teleportation.
And my brain just started hurting again. Now, what, when you're talking about the space bubble collapsing, how would we, I guess in teleportation, you would disappear from one place and appear in another, correct?
Yes.
Okay, how do we get the bubble to reappear?
Well, now, that's something that we don't know how to do yet. I have some speculation.
Well, do we know how to collapse people's bubbles already?
No, we don't know how to do that yet either.
Oh, I thought you were privy to some fun experiments.
Well, we are, but they're just the very rudimentary starts of this model. For example, and I'm going to talk again a little bit about David Roundtree's experiment.
Yeah, I'm sorry for.
That's okay. The bending of space-time in a local environment, like a haunted house that has physical matter present at that bending, like air molecules or building material or flesh or that type of thing. One of the things that this would create, as I was talking about, was a difference in the barometric pressure between inside this bubble and outside. David Roundtree has already experimentally verified that. Another thing that we would find is that it would actually create a twisting and a variation in space. In space-time. Space and time, we know, are linked together. So when you twist space, you also twist time. So, for example, if you took two points that were, let's say, 10 feet apart, and you had a straight line of space between the two of them, that a electron or a photon would take a given amount of time to travel between point A and point B, because we know those particles' velocities. But let's say that you bent the space between those two points to where instead of having a straight line between point A and point B, you actually have a curve. Well, that particle, that photon or that electron, will travel along the geometric lines of that space, but now it's traveling in an arc. And so it would take a longer period of time for the particle to go from point A to point B because it's traveling in a curve. And once again, David Roundtree has experimentally validated this. Another thing that we would find, this is part of what my model explains, people talk about all the time at the sites of these paranormal events, that they get this feeling of heaviness. And it's not something, Jordan, that, you know, 6 out of 10 people would give you different subjective definitions. It's like 99 out of 100 people use the same word, heavy. And we all know what the word heavy means. It's something that we encounter every day in our lives. Well, the bending of space creates an additional gravitational field. And so if you were present at this phenomena, you would literally have a feeling of heaviness because there would be an increased gravitational field. Now, what David Roundtree has recorded and has verified experimentally, that at the moment of paranormal events, specifically with EVPs, he has detected a fluctuation or a distortion in gravity. And not in a sense where it increases or decreases, but he actually has recorded it on three axes. In other words, it's not that the gravitational field of the Earth itself is changing, because we would only see that in one direction going towards the center of the Earth. It's that he's detected this in three dimensions, which means that an additional gravitational field separate from that of the Earth is actually being produced literally in midair. And this is exactly what my model would predict. This is mind-blowing. This is groundbreaking.
Now, Lola's got a question here.
Well, not really a question, but everybody that listens to the show knows I'm just dying to have some type of paranormal experience. And try as I might, the ghosties just go, you know what, we're not going to mess with her. Except one time, since you're talking about that feeling of heaviness, I was in a house and we were trying to not really get EVPs, but just, you know, trying to see if there were any electromagnetic fluctuations. And that feeling hit both of us. So much so that I had to literally get out of the room because I thought, I can't breathe. Is that what you're talking about, that feeling like you can't breathe, like there's something really pressing in on you?
Yes. Think about it.
Oh, so it has happened to me.
Yeah. Think about what the curving of space would do if it occurred in the presence of a living being and the effect that it would have on that individual. And you could understand not only the feelings of heaviness, but what if people talk about is suddenly getting nauseous and sick to their stomach and passing out. My goodness, we still don't know the effect on the nervous system that such a bending of space would have on a living body.
I would think it could crush you if that's actually the case, if it were, you know, really big enough, or you were caught in the center of it.
It could be very harmful. Of course, understand that you yourself also have a very solid presence in the physical universe, where the information that comprises your being and your body is fully materialized, and that the bubble of space-time that surrounds you is fully materialized as well and strongly present in space-time. So it's highly unlikely that a bubble that was opening up that only had a partial materialization in it, like a transparent apparition, or no materialization at all, would be able to overpower your being and your physical presence and your particular bubble, but it would be able to twist it and bend it enough so you would get all these different effects that people feel.
All right, now, but go then, if we're talking about an apparition, that's something that hasn't fully taken real form. Then you go and you talk about shadow people. Now that, to me, is more of a physical presence, more of a solid kind of thing. Would that then make a bigger difference?
Well, according to my model, no. It's just a different type of information that's being materialized.
Oh, okay.
And I'll explain it to you what I mean.
Like a bigger bubble.
Well, actually, we have to think about the phenomena of sight first. There's so many things that we take for granted in our normal day-to-day human experience, and we don't think about the scientific explanations for these things. For example, we see things because light reflects off of them. Everything that we see is because those particular objects or effects are deflecting photons towards our eyes. We actually are quite blind. We can't see anything. All we can see is reflected light. We can't see any object that exists in the universe. And when you take away all the light, we're absolutely blind. But now, among the objects that we know of that we can see are objects that are painted black or are black color, which absorb every light of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things appear black. So what I say is that a shadow figure is just presenting a surface that absorbs all the visible wavelengths of light. So instead of seeing a reflection off of it, we're actually seeing a vacuum where light is being sucked in and absorbed.
Like a black hole.
Visually,
I know you know
not
what a black hole is.
No.
Yeah. We're on two different levels here, so but yeah, then that's okay. I understand that since you put it in very, very easy to understand terms.
Okay, now that she gets it.
Mr. Newton.
we were talking before you were explaining about bending, you know, space and time as kind of one aspect. What are your thoughts on time travel?
Well, I think this is what has always fascinated with me with paranormal phenomena, because we see the evidence in the paranormal of all the types of technologies and fantastic possibilities that we can imagine. And one of them is time travel. Let's take, for example, an apparition of I always like to talk about the Victorian lady, because we seem to see a lot of them in this country.
They weren't happy people.
I guess not. No.
Well, if you've ever owned a couch or anything that they had to sit on, then you'd understand why they really were not happy people.
Uh-huh. Now, I understand in the British Isles, they see a lot of demon dogs or black dogs. That kind of thing. We see a lot of Victorian ladies. but if you think about this idea of everything in the universe comprising of information from which all those things can be constructed, then the Victorian lady is also such an object that is constructed from all this information. So if she lived, let's say, 130 or 140 years ago, then what we would see is the very information from which she's comprised of 140 years ago, having been materialized then, and then when we see the apparition of her today, it's that exact same body of information materializing today before our eyes. So in such an instance, we are actually seeing a living, breathing example of the time travel of information, because it's coming to us from the past 140 years into the future.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. What about actually us traveling, say, forward or backward in our physical selves?
We know that the dimension of time begins to collapse on itself as we approach the speed of light.
Yeah.
And this is one of the causes for what they call time dilation, where they say...
You're going to have to dumb it up, Tom.
All right. Where someone was, if they were traveling in a spaceship at light speed and they traveled for 2 years and they came back to Earth, they could find that many decades had passed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So if we were to collapse a bubble of space-time and shove the information in it, so to speak, out of space-time, it would enter into a super light realm where the dimensions of past, present, and future are completely collapsed in on themselves. It could rematerialize at any point along the timeline. And so using that technology, we, I believe, could someday figure out how to project ourselves into time.
Wow.
This single model answers so many questions, it's mind-blowing.
Has anybody, like, grasped onto your views, your theory?
Well, David Roundtree has.
Yeah.
He says, I'm the only human being that's ever presented a model that challenged his. I've had a couple other scientifically minded people and a couple of degreed people look at it. They found it very fascinating. It's very difficult to get them to shift a paradigm.
Uh-huh.
Because with working scientists, their bread and butter and their living and even their professional reputation depends upon their full embracement of the current paradigm of physics. So it's very difficult to get people to, you know, willfully come to your side of the fence, so to speak. But what they can't argue is that my model answers certain questions that the standard model of physics that we have today just simply can't. Number two, it answers them in a convincing way. Number three, it's a scientific theory in that it makes predictions that are physically testable. Because it also talks about things like the percentage of gravity to visible mass was smaller at the earlier part of the universe than it is today. This is something that can be tested through observation, and that the first moments of the Big Bang were superluminal. So when matter materialized, it was almost not like a nucleus coming out of a center, but it was like a smoke ring. I call the beginning of the universe the Big Puff.
The Big Puff.
Uh-huh. And so this would explain a number of mathematical anomalies that they have in trying to trace everything back to event one. They get very close to it, and then they run into this place where it seems to be like this strange expansion of the early universe that they really can't fit in any kind of a physical model. And my model gives an example of how that could be, as well as how we hear voices come out of thin air in a haunted house.
Now, I got to ask, now you've been doing this kind of research for, your book says, 2 decades.
Yeah.
Now, what is your background? Like, are you a scientist? Or, you know, is that the kind of stuff that you do? Are you?
I have a very varied background. And I do have titles. But I'll tell you what I do. I don't publicize them for a couple of reasons.
Uh-huh.
Primarily because I want people to judge my work on its own merits. When people don't like what you have to say...
You could have dropped out of middle school and you'd still be smarter than me. Like, yeah.
Well, you know, this is what happened when Thomas Edison, you know, demonstrated the gramophone before the Paris Academy of Sciences.
Uh-huh.
They saw a man that didn't even have a grammar school education and automatically dismissed his invention as a trick of ventriloquism. They gave his physical invention no serious consideration because the man was an uneducated ignorant, Thomas Edison. So, you know, it's very tempting to attack the messenger when you can't debate the message. And so what I tell people is, look, everybody's heard of Stanton Friedman. He has a doctorate in physics. He talks about UFOs everywhere. And I ask them, name me one person who now believes in UFOs because Stanton Friedman, who has a doctorate in physics, said they exist.
And?
No one.
Oh.
No one's going to believe just because a doctor of physics tells you that UFOs are out there.
Uh-huh.
So what I ask people to do is take a look at my work. You know, don't think about what my background and what does it matter. If I spent 10 years memorizing a physics book, I could go and take a test and probably score higher than the best physicist in the world because I've memorized the book. He hasn't.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think it's Louis Pasteur. No, and within the French scientific community, believed anything that he was saying. He was a fraud. He was a quack, even when he was curing people. You know, it was, as far as they were concerned, the scientific community was so slow to, you know, embrace anything that he had done, any work he had done, and any breakthroughs he had had.
They absolutely, and history's loaded with this. One of the great, one of the most prominent astrophysicists of his time, Dr. Van der Riet Woolley was his name, if I remember it correctly, back in the late 50s, declared that space travel was, quote-unquote, utter bilge. And within a year, the Russians had launched Sputnik.
Yeah.
You know, when the peasantry in the countryside in the 19th century reported to the Paris Academy of Sciences, our favorite group of boys there, that there was such a thing as a meteorite, the learned scientists, you know, calmed the ignorant masses by saying, look, rocks cannot fall out of the sky because there just simply are no rocks in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, and so history has been filled with people that were very highly degreed that said some very, very stupid things. Hey, you know, we just had this trial with the doctor of Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has a doctorate's degree.
Yeah, and you really want him treating you.
Yeah, he must be a really smart guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a difference. What I try to stress to people is there is a difference between science and scientists. Science has an agenda, and it's pure. Scientists are human beings, and they have their own agenda.
Okay.
Well, I didn't mean any anything.
Offense.
Yeah, offense to that.
None taken.
Okay.
No, I agree with you. I'd rather see the work stand alone than simply because, you know, have it either validified or, no, that's not the right word. I'm making words up now. I'm trying to sound smart.
And say you don't need a degree to,
yeah,
to do it. And I'm not saying you do. I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying, you know, I've hacked into computers by watching a 10-year-old tell me how to do it on YouTube. You know, you don't need a college to tell you you're smart in order to be smart.
Just take a look at just in the mid-50s, 1950s and before, the universe was considered our galaxy.
Yeah.
Even up till around, you know, a little past World War II, we saw these other star clusters and we just thought that they were collections of stars within our own Milky Way, and we believed that the Milky Way was the universe. That wasn't all that long ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Tom, where can we get your book?
You can find out about the book and where I'll be appearing next and where to buy the book and related articles. You can find all of that at www.cosmicveil, spelled V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com.
Behindthecosmicveil.com.
No, cosmicveil.com.
Just the Cosmic Veil.
No.
Cosmic Veil.
Just cosmicveil.com.
Now he'll put just in there. www.cosmicveil.com.
Thank you very much.
But the book is called Behind the Cosmic Veil.
Right.
And it is great. And we didn't even touch. You have a whole section on religion and how that fits into all that, too.
Because that was part of the equation too,
and it's very interesting. And I think we touched on it last time that you were on, and we didn't even need to touch. It's a nice book. I enjoy it, and I think everybody should go out there and grab it and support Tom.
Yes,
help him get his next book published.
Yeah, that'll pay my school loans.
There you go. Well, the more you get published, the more you don't have to pay it back because your readers will pay it.
Yeah.
How's that go?
There you go.
We are out of time, and I want to thank you very much. I know we've been talking by email, and we even had to reschedule a few times, but it's always a pleasure to have you on. It's my ears smoke afterwards because I can't. I spend the whole time trying to focus so hard to figure out what you're talking about.
Well,
but
you're getting it, Mr. Newton, so there's no problem with that.
Hey, you know, it's not every day you get called Isaac Newton.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom. Yeah, thanks. Now I'm going to have to live with this.
Well, there you go.
you've created a monster.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, thank you very much. CosmicVeil.com. Go to it. Find out what he's up to. What's your next date you're going to be somewhere?
Well, now I've got a very exciting interview coming up on the 18th. This is on the Shark Radio Network. If you do a search on the Shark Radio Network, you'll find this. It's kind of a crazy show, but it's going to be Sunday the 18th at 10 to 11 p.m.
Uh-huh.
or 11:30 p.m. Eastern, and I'm going to be co-guest with David Roundtree.
All right.
We're going to talk about all this this very deep and strange stuff.
Between the two of you, I bet that anybody out there could pass a college exam and become the smartest person in their neighborhood. I hope your theory goes on. I hope that more people grasp onto it. It's very interesting. And it's about time somebody came up with something new.
Yeah, this is what it gives us. It gives us a model, a paradigm that we can actually begin to understand and get a handle on what's going on with all these strange things.
All right, Tom, we want to thank you again, and we'll have you back on.
That sounds like fun.
All right, see you, Tom.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye, Tom. Bye. That is all the time we got, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Until next week, don't be afraid, only believe.